Hello, and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. In this sixth episode of my audiobook, Forever in Florence, we again explore the lives of Isabella and Francesca, two women who lived 500 years apart in Florence, Italy. The story is told in two parallel parts. The chapters numbered 31, 33, and 35 talk about the life of Isabella in the modern day, as she waits again to meet Bob Dylan, her hero, at a concert coming up in Milan. The even-numbered chapters 32, 34, and 36 detail the life of Francesca as she attempts to help Michelangelo Buonarroti escape the Medici family, get away from Florence to the safety of Fiesole outside the city. I hope you're enjoying this audiobook, and if you would like to receive a written transcript of the story so far, please email me at johnscottlawton@hotmail.co.uk. A transcript should appear online on all podcast platforms after a few days, and it helps to listen to the story to follow the words if you need to, so that you can pick up on any vocabulary or any words which are slightly unusual. Thank you very much indeed. Chapter 31. Isabella woke the next morning to the customary scratching of Luna and Rosa at her bedroom door. "Okay, girls, okay, I'm coming," she called. Except she wasn't. She couldn't move her hips across the mattress. The night's dancing had taken its toll, and she was finding it difficult to locate anything beneath her waist. She hadn't realised she was so unfit. She would obviously have to intensify her yoga and Pilates sessions if she was going to keep up with David like this. Somehow she struggled into the shower and had her usual breakfast, making sure that she had a warm drink to start her day and to settle her stomach to receive food. She had really benefited from the Ayurvedic diet she had practiced for several years now, and she felt better in body and soul as a result of the associated meditations, purgation, and treatments. Isabella had no definite plans for the weekend, but she knew she had to catch up on some housework, do some food shopping, take the dogs for their summer clipping as their fur was getting matted and thick, and see Mia to give her a debrief from last night's date. She'd start her day with the latter, sending Mia a WhatsApp message to meet in their favourite Saturday morning cafe for their rendezvous. Mia's reply was almost immediate, obviously very keen to be brought up to date with the night's events, and suggesting that Isabella had only 20 minutes to get ready. Isabella had a beautiful pair of lilac loose cotton trousers, which she hadn't worn for a while. At least Mia wouldn't have seen her wearing them for at least a year, so that was a start. Choosing a simple, low-cut white cotton top to go with it, she adorned herself with a pair of delicate, long earrings, which were not her usual style, but for some reason, she felt drawn to them this morning. As the pair met at the cafe, they laughed, as Mia was dressed as her mirror image, except Isabella's best friend was wearing a pair of loose-fitting white trousers and a deep lilac top, exactly the same elegant shade as Isabella's. "What are the chances?" laughed Mia as she kissed her friend gently on each cheek, her hands pressed onto her shoulders. Isabella took a second to realise what she had just said, but then laughed too, when she got the joke. "I'm sorry, darling," said Isabella. "I'm still knackered from a night's dancing." "Oh my God, where did you go?" inquired her excited friend. "You'll never guess," replied Isabella. "Not La Casa." "Did anyone recognise you?" asked Mia. "No, but I saw a few people I knew. Luckily we were too busy on the dance floor to have to get into conversation with anyone. I had a great night. David's a bloody good dancer." "How weird is that? You didn't let on to David, did you?" "No, I made like I'd never been before, which was a bit wrong of me, I know," said Isabella. "Darling, it's a year ago now. Maybe he doesn't go there anymore," suggested Mia. The pair kept smiling at each other as they obviously shared a sentiment and a thought which wasn't being openly spoken about at this time. They both had had complex love lives for as long as they could remember, and their current state of dating was no different. "Anyway," said Isabella, "what are your plans for the weekend?"
"I don't know, really. Have you got anything in mind?" replied Mia. "I've got a few jobs I must do at home, and I've got no food in, and the dogs have to go for their clip later today. But I'll be free this evening if you fancy doing something."
"How did you leave it with David?" asked Mia, inquiringly.
"To be honest, I can't quite remember. I was very, very tired, and I'd had a lot to drink for me. When he dropped me off, I think he said he would message me, something like that.
You don't sound very enthused, suggested Mia.
Oh, I am. It's just that I was so tired. I really can't remember, explained Isabella.
As they enjoyed their coffees and croissants, the pair took to their favourite people-watching game, with a couple of immediate quick wins for Isabella as she heard two German couples order their breakfast at the next table. Then it was Mia's turn to identify a woman who was looking at a jewellery store in the small street market across the small piazza where they were seated. Her challenge was more difficult, as they couldn't hear her speak, but from her clothes, Mia suggested she was Scandinavian. Narrowing it down further was a bit difficult, but she was going for Swedish rather than Danish or Norwegian. The beauty of this game was that there were no wrong answers, unless you could hear the unwilling contestants' accents. In silent observations like this, it really didn't matter whether the answer was right or wrong. The women just sat quietly, enjoying each other's presence and friendship, and casting wandering eyes over the waiters and waitresses who were busily serving the bustling cafe. The morning sun was penetrating the Florentine square now as it rose above the surrounding buildings. It immediately became hotter, and the pair had to decide whether to find shade or leave to get on with their respective tasks.
Why don't we agree to meet for a drink at 7 o'clock and take it from there? Suggested Mia finally.
Okay, that's fine. Let's leave it open. Where shall we meet?
How about Harry's bar, by the river? I've not been there for ages, replied Isabella.
Okay, we can meet there at least and walk on to somewhere else if the vibe isn't right.
It was Isabella's turn to kiss her friend now, which she did delicately to each cheek, accompanied by a tight hug to really communicate the warmth and closeness they felt for each other. Mia was a bit of an enigma. She could be the life and soul of the party, but then disappear for weeks at a time, not always coming up with an explanation for her absence when she re-emerged from wherever she'd been hiding herself. Isabella didn't mind the mystery. On the contrary, it added to Mia's charm and intrigue. She hoped, though, that her friend was not in any danger when she went missing, as she would hate to think that her friend needed her and she was not available for her. As Isabella paid the bill, her phone pinged. It was a WhatsApp message from David.
Good morning. Thank you for last night. I hope you enjoyed it. Would you like to meet tonight for something a bit more relaxed, perhaps dinner by the river?
This gave Isabella a decision to make. David or Mia? Potential lover or best friend? It was a choice she'd had to make before. Perhaps, this time, she could get it right.
Chapter 32. As Francesca retired to her bed, giving her dogs one last hug and kisses on their heads before they too settled down for the night, she blew out the large candles in her kitchen and took one small candle up to her cool and cosy bedroom under the eaves of the tiled roof. She loved this room and her bed. They were her sanctuary from the chaos and noise of the Medici court, her retreat for when the world simply became too much for her, or she needed to rest, or think, or not think at all. The dark drapes across the windows and the wooden shutters outside kept the room colder than the rest of the house, even though it was under the roof. Much of this floor of her house fell under the long shadow of other buildings as the afternoon and evening sun grew in intensity, so she valued the stillness of the air and the quiet this space offered her. Having already showered earlier, she washed her face again and tidied her hair, ready for her sleep and her dreams. As she slowly knelt down to pray on the soft cushions at the side of her bed, Francesca could smell an alluring scent, possibly of flowers, but she couldn't quite detect where it was coming from. It smelt like geraniums, a scent she adored. Praying for the safety of her beloved master Michelangelo Buonarroti and all her family and friends, Francesca gave thanks for the day and the blessings God had given her. She was pious and proud of her faith, and immediately felt the comfort of her prayers in the stillness of the room. The sheets on her bed were cold to the touch, but in an inviting way as she pulled her long nightdress over the length of her body. Rubbing her feet together quickly at the bottom of the bed to offer some initial warmth, Francesca began to think of her attitude to Antonio that evening, and whether she had been too cruel in her response to him. In her mind,
She began to try to work out what was stopping her allowing herself to enjoy the pleasures of this handsome young man's attentions. She knew the answer, but she was not sure it fully explained her reluctance to engage with other partners, male or female. Her love for Michelangelo was so strong that she was not sure she had space in her heart for anyone else. She adored him. She respected his wisdom, his creativity, and most of all, his passion for life. He too was a pious man for whom his faith was vitally important. She was not sure that she could get close to anyone who didn't share that Christian faith. But in praying for his safety, she was concerned for Michelangelo as a man. He was not her lover, and never had been. He was a friend of the family with whom she had a long-lasting and caring affection. If it wasn't romantic love then, what was it that bonded them together, that fueled this desire to honour him, to protect him from harm, and be unable to think about anyone else but him? These thoughts made her restless and disturbed her attempts to get to sleep. She came back again to the earlier interaction with Antonio. Although she had never married, she had, untypically, had lovers before, both male and female. She did not know whose company she enjoyed the most or whose affections she would seek in a sexual way. She felt both. So, why did she not let things develop with Antonio? Was it because he was too young, or that he was soon to be going back to university in Bologna? Her mind began to be unsettled as she could not find answers to the questions she was asking herself in her awake, conscious moments before sleep. Francesca hoped that her subconscious dreams may provide her with the answers she needed to more fully understand what was going on in her life at the moment. She had attracted people to her in her cause to help Michelangelo escape from his self-imposed captivity. First Maria Elena, then Antonio, and now his grandparents and their workers were all prepared to help her not only secure Michelangelo's release, but to look after him until he could be sure he was safe. Francesca was very grateful for all this love and support from her friends and associates. As she drifted into that longed-for deep sleep, it was Maria Elena who came to her first, coming into her bedroom wearing a long white cotton nightdress. She climbed into bed with Francesca and the pair embraced, holding that position for several minutes. In silence, Maria Elena then moved Francesca's blonde hair from her neck and began to kiss her there, gently at first, and then with increasing pressure and intensity. Francesca adored the sensations kissing delivered throughout her whole body, and she was keen to return the favour and to kiss Maria Elena. But she held Francesca down deliberately and firmly with her arm to reach across and kiss the other side of her neck, with the same sweet and tender impressions at first, then longer, more impassioned kissing, reflecting the growing sensations they were both experiencing. The wetness of Maria Elena's kisses brought warmth to Francesca's delicate white skin. Maria Elena now had her thigh between Francesca's legs, and the pair rolled slowly around the bed, led by the kissing actions, which were now mouth-on-mouth, reciprocal and meaningful. As the passions grew inside each of the women, Francesca felt the press of Maria Elena's thigh on her groin, and she squeezed it tightly, sending deep vibrations all through her body, up and down the entire length of her legs, and back up into her chest, to her heart. Maria Elena's long, dark brown hair fell onto Francesca's face to stroke it delicately like a feather, increasing the sensation in her upper body. Maria Elena now knelt upon the bed, and in the dim, shadowed light of the room, Francesca was able to make out the shape of her breasts as she removed her long nightgown over her head and hair, slowly and deliberately. Francesca lifted herself up onto her elbows, and Maria Elena cupped one of her breasts immediately into Francesca's mouth, inviting her to kiss it. Francesca's desire to do so needed no encouragement, and she willfully accepted the gift, and slowly licked and mouthed her breast until both women's nipples were hard and erect. Now Maria Elena whispered something unintelligible into Francesca's ear as she kissed it, allowing her tongue to explore the earlobes as she did so. Francesca's reaction was immediate and automatic, the sounds of Maria Elena's sweet voice forcing her to intensify the grip she had of her lover's thigh as the pair writhed and moved in rhythmic harmony. Maria Elena's hand was now underneath Francesca, feeling for her nightdress to lift it over her beautiful buttocks. As she managed to reveal them, Maria Elena moved away from Francesca's neck and turned her attention to Francesca's bottom, kissing it passionately and extensively, her tongue exploring every crease of her partner's body. Twisted in a mix of hair, bedclothes and nightdresses, the pair continued their kissing, covering every part of each other's bodies and moaning in delightful pleasure as the power and passion grew in repeated orgasms of delight and release. Francesca began to dominate proceedings, pushing Maria Elena back onto the bed and driving her face between Maria Elena's legs. As she kissed her there, Maria Elena lifted her bottom from the bed, allowing Francesca to bring her hands underneath her bottom, lifting her whole body towards her to increase the pressure and sensation of her kisses. As she awoke, Francesca found herself naked and alone, her tight thighs wrapped around a firm pillow that was wet from her bodily juices. Francesca explored the bed and looked around the now half-lit room, but there was no one there. She pulled her hand away from her breast to her forehead and tried to recount the dream, to see how it ended and to understand the significance of it. If her dreams were her expression of unresolved emotions, did it mean that Maria Elena was her intended lover, her muse to guide her through the next chapter of her life? Stretching across the full diagonal space of her bed, Francesca pondered the meaning of the dream. The intense kissing. This part she knew to be true. She loved kissing as a typical Gemini. But the vivid scene of making love to Maria Elena and being made love to by her was so real. What could it mean? How could it be so like her desires, so immediate, so tangible? Francesca drifted back off to sleep, exhausted and confused, her body still pulsing from the feeling of the lovemaking, which had had the same effect, whether it was real or imagined. She was in near total ecstasy. Chapter 33. Isabella was in no hurry to get home. The dogs would be okay for another hour, and she just loved the vibe of the city on an early Saturday morning. She thought it might be her favourite day of the week. The dog's appointment at the salon wasn't until noon, so she had a couple of hours to herself. She needed it. She didn't need to talk to anyone or to listen to anyone else's problems. She just wanted to be by herself, with her own thoughts, silently wandering around her home city, breathing the air deeply into her lungs and watching the people around her. Other people always fascinated her. She was intrigued by people's mannerisms, the way they communicated with each other, and the little things they did to occupy their time or to earn their living. As she left the small piazza with the cafe they had just frequented, she observed the small food market lining one side of the street. It was mostly fruit and vegetables, but it was all so fresh that she could smell the pineapples, the oranges, and even the bananas as she walked past the busy stalls. She stopped to buy some apples and dark black cherries, tasting some as she did so, to the obvious delight of the stallholder, who kissed his fingers to his lips in appreciation. Rounding the corner of her home street, she stopped in her favourite bakery for some fresh croissant and a large baguette, made in the premises' own bakery, of course, and as warm and fresh as they could possibly be. The baker stepped out from behind the counter to greet her with flowered hands, bringing them together in a praying motion to acknowledge her presence and her regular custom. She was certainly very popular there. Children were playing football in the small side street leading to Isabella's home, and she shouted good morning to them. They stopped to ask if they could play with the dogs, but Isabella explained that the dogs would be going out shortly and they could play with them for a few minutes then. That seemed to satisfy the kids, and they returned to carry on with their important game. The shade from the ancient olive tree in the centre of the courtyard was enough to reach the dog's outdoor kennel in the corner of this very private space. She often wondered how old the tree was and how it happened to get there, into the heart of the city, and to have survived this long. A few months previously, she had had a friend build a hexagon of bench seats around it, partly so she could easily and safely gather the fruits when they were ready, but also so that she could sit and read her book or lie in the warm air, catching whatever breeze there was to be gleaned from the nearby street, which all depended on the direction of the wind, of course. She had noticed an interesting carving in the bark of the tree the last time she sat with her back next to it to take in its healing energy. A small heart with two names carved either side of it in very faint relief. Antonio and Francesca, if you could remember rightly, with a Cupid's arrow joining them, a kiss after each of their names. She would have to take a photo one day to try to see how old the arboreous tattoo actually was. Isabella thought that the tree must be hundreds of years old. Perhaps she ought to have it dated one day. Greeting the dogs before they could greet her and spoil her elegant trousers, she let them wander around the courtyard for a few minutes while she changed into a more appropriate pair of denim jeans and put on a less fashionable top for the trip to the doggy salon. The last time she had been in the salon, she had noted some very fashionable but functional doggy accessories, collars, holsters, and blankets made by a woman in Slovakia she had actually met on an Ayurvedic retreat in Kerala, India last year. The collars, in particular, were made of fine leather and looked very substantial and of good quality. She made a mental note to make sure she treated the dogs to some fashion items once they looked smarter than they did now. Now Isabella had to decide what to do about David. In the past, she knew that when she was at the start of a potential relationship, or plain going out with someone at first, she had been guilty of neglecting her friends for a time, inadvertently, but wrongly in her view. As lovely as David was, she was not going to do that again. She got ready to word her reply carefully, so as not to put him off, but to reject his offer of another night out so soon. "David, I had a lovely time last night, thank you. I really enjoyed the club and our dancing. My head was a bit heavy this morning, and I'm still trying to find out where my legs have disappeared to. I'm afraid I'm not free tonight. Perhaps we could meet up in the week, or after next Friday's lesson again. Best wishes, Isabella." After she'd just sent it, she wondered whether it made it sound like she had another date. It wasn't any of David's business if she had, but she didn't want to play games or to lead him on. If she needed to, she'd wait for his reply and see if she needed to clarify anything, although she wasn't going to change her mind for anyone or anything. She had learnt the hard way that no means no, and she could not compromise on that. Isabella didn't have to wait long for a reply. David obviously wasn't playing it cool to try to make it look like he hadn't read her message, or that he was choosing to delay his reply, as all the dating apps advise nowadays. Again, he was his very polite, gentlemanly self. He needed no explanation and didn't seem to take it as an out-and-out rejection. "Dear Isabella, that's perfectly fine. I hope you have a lovely time this evening. Yes, please let me know when you might be free this week, and if you'd like to, we could have dinner then. I'm certainly up for more dancing next Friday, if you think your legs can take it." Isabella's one-word reply, "Okay," she didn't want to appear too keen, was quickly followed by a short PS from David. "Just in case you're free much later on, I'm singing at a club near midnight with one of my students who plays guitar. It's next door to the Irish bar we spoke about in class, which I'm pretty sure you know. Ciao." That was sorted then. David didn't seem to take offence, and she had left the gate open for a possible dinner date next week. If her legs managed to recover in time, she was also sure she might be up for some more dancing, but she wasn't committing to that just yet. The dogs had a 5-minute play with the children on the way to the doggy salon, and while they were being groomed, Isabella treated them to two beautiful Dogs Run Free collars and holsters, and two special blankets with the same motif and logo. She wanted to support the business, as she was pretty impressed with the Slovak woman when she had met her. She seemed incredibly chilled and positive, the kind of person she liked to have in her life. Returning home, she felt the need for a siesta in the courtyard garden in the company of her now beautifully clipped and groomed hounds, each wearing their own personal collars. Isabella had taken a book with her, but again, she was too tired to read it. Instead, she dropped off into one of those very deep sleeps that you can get in the afternoon sun. In it, she saw a woman not dissimilar in appearance to herself, and also an older man with dark hair but a greying beard. He looked like some kind of mad artist or sculptor. It was a recurring dream she kept having, and thus far, it was identical to the last time she'd had it. This time, It carried on a little further, and a youngish man, that the blonde-haired woman called Antonio, was holding two dogs on a long stretch of rope. The dogs looked just like Luna and Rosa, and were certainly of the same breed. The purchase of their new collars must have stimulated her subconscious to dream about them in this way, she thought, because it was the first time they had made an appearance in her dream sequence. Isabella actually slept for nearly 3 hours, long enough to put herself under some time pressure to get showered, dressed and ready for tonight's meet-up. Harry's bar, or the American bar, had gone up market since she had last been there, and she wanted to look the part. She chose an elegant long blue dress with gold flecks and a rounded collar, slightly puffy at the top of the shoulders. It suited her well. With it, she would have to wear heels rather than her more comfortable pumps, but she wasn't going to go mad. Her calf muscles wouldn't take it. The pair met at 7 as agreed. Mia wasn't even late. They ordered drinks while they sat by the cool of the river terrace and shared their day's activities. Mia had done some housework too, but hinted that she had also had contact with the Milan office about the upcoming concert. It was now just over 2 weeks away. The excitement was building. Two American guys from Texas came up and made a play for the women, almost trying to sit down at their table, uninvited. The women were not in the mood for male company tonight. Comically, both Isabella and Mia had at least one foot wrapped around the chair legs of the seat next to them, so when the guys tried to pull the chairs away from the table to sit down, the chairs didn't move, nor did the insistent guys. Mia flashed her eyes at one of the waiters and shifted her chin towards an empty table some distance away. Seeing this, the handsome waiter came up to the men and gesticulated to them to follow him to where they would be seated. "No means no," the women said in unison. They ate very slowly, almost picking at their food as they preferred to talk, drink their Prosecco and the carbonated water, rather than get through the four courses of their meal. It was well past 11 p.m. when the women left the table, thanking the waiters for their kindness and service, and laughing at the absurdity of the situation with the two American chaps earlier in the evening, and the same thing with two drunk Irish guys as they were about to leave. As the two close friends walked slowly down the bank of the Arno, taking in the breeze off the water and admiring each and every building as they did so, the pair chatted and reminisced and spoke endlessly about their plans for the future, the Bob Dylan concert in Milan, and their future jobs. Change was ahead for both of them. "Do you fancy some music, darling?" said Isabella. "Always. Where? What kind?" replied Mia. "I'm not too sure what type of music, but I know where," Isabella responded. "But it's David singing, if that's okay. We don't need to talk to him, just see what he's up to." "Sounds a bit weird, but okay, taking advantage of a blind guy by stalking him, that sounds very honourable," said Mia. "Just come on, it's not like that, come on." They found the Irish bar, and to its right was a set of stairs down to what looked like a jazz club. The place was very dark, but there was a good crowd in, and the bar area was heaving as people looked to extend their night. There were no tables left, so they stood with their backs to the staircase, catching a bit of a warm draught coming down them, as David was led to the stage by a guy she didn't recognise carrying a classic Spanish guitar. The Italian compere introduced them and explained that David would be singing in English. Some of the crowd mumbled their disapproval, but generally there was an expectant silence out of respect for the performers. The dark-haired guitarist started with a short solo piece that led seamlessly into John Martin's Solid Air. David's deep tones and voice was full of feeling and had the crowd spellbound. The passion in his voice, the ease with which he lifted each refrain, and the lightness with which he delivered the song's chorus. "I don't know what's going on in your mind, but I know you don't like what you find when you're moving through solid air, solid air. I know you, I love you, I will be your friend, I will follow you anywhere, even through solid air." David explained as the applause died down. That was a song that John Martin wrote for his close friend Nick Drake, when they were living together, existing on toast and beer, and both learning how tough it would be to make it in the folk music scene in London in the 1970s. It's a long time ago, I know, but both guys were pretty crucial in my musical education. The next song is for someone who might become very special in my life. She can't make it tonight, but if she was here, I'd like her to hear this message. It's by Cat Stevens, or Yusuf Islam, as he prefers to be known sometimes. It's called If I Laugh. We hope you enjoy it. As the song closed and the audience got ready to applaud, it was all Isabella could do to turn around, climb the sticky stairs with her stiff, tired legs, and gulp in the night air so that she could breathe again and stop crying. Chapter 34. Long before dawn, Francesca awoke to the sound of early bird calls and activity on the river close to her bedroom window. She could hear the boatmen calling to each other as the men at the dockside helped to unload their cargo. They didn't care that others were sleeping. They had worked through the night, and as soon as this boat was empty, they could go home to their beds to sleep. Groggy from the depths of her sleep, Francesca calmed the dogs as they ran up and down the steep wooden stairs to greet her. Really, they should have slept outside in the courtyard, but she had heard whisperings of dog thieves being active in the city, and she wanted to protect Rosa and Luna as much as they wanted to protect her. She let them out into the courtyard and motioned them to be quiet as the sun started to make its way into the city. Francesca knew that today would be a busy day. Signor Facchetti would be taking off to Bologna, allowing her some time and space to plan for Michelangelo's release. She had to work out a way of getting a message to the farm in Fiesole to find out when Roberto would be coming to the market. It had to be soon. She knew that there was a daily delivery of dairy items like milk and eggs, which came into Florence from the growing village every day at this time. So she quickly scribbled a cryptic note addressed to Roberto and sealed it in an official-looking envelope. This she delivered to the cartman, who she could hear several streets away, again oblivious to the fact that most of the city was still trying to sleep at this time. Walking the dogs along the river on the way back from delivering the note, she observed the ducks swimming in neat lines by the water's edge. The ducklings were growing big now, and no longer struggling to keep up with their mother. Soon they would be able to journey into the water on their own. But for now, they were glad of the comfort and closeness of their parents. As she arrived home, Francesca was reminded of her vivid dream as she still wondered what it all meant. She liked Maria Elena and enjoyed her company, but she had never considered her as a potential partner. That bit was strange. There was no doubting the passion she experienced in her sleep, though. That bit was very exhilarating and exhausting in equal measure. Taking her shower, she caressed her own body the way she had the night before, and felt its softness and tenderness. As she did so, she began to sing a soft, lilting lullaby for some reason. Her voice was gentle and refined, sensual and mellifluous, certainly very appealing, and she remembered that people had often commented on the clarity with which she spoke, and the pleasure her Bible readings had given to the blind people at the church she attended. So much so that she was asked to visit other churches across the city to do the same. The dogs needed feeding, as did Francesca, but she was anxious to get to court to maintain a sense of normality so that no questions could be asked as to her whereabouts over the next few days. As she hurried to work, she saw Maria Elena in the distance, herself anxious to get to work on time. Francesca caught up with her and shouted to gain her attention. Maria Elena turned around and beamed at Francesca in delight when she saw who was calling her. It was the same smile she had given Francesca in her dream, a loving, gentle, tender smile of adoration. Having embraced, the pair stood holding hands as Francesca whispered the latest plans to Maria Elena to gain her support should events unfold quickly. Maria Elena nodded silently in agreement as her involvement was requested, and she squeezed Francesca's hand as the pair parted company, giving each other wistful looks as the distance between them grew. At the Medici court, there was a more relaxed atmosphere than had been experienced when Signor Facchetti was in station. Everyone was nervous of him, and he ruled his staff with a rod of iron. People who would never normally speak to Francesca greeted her warmly and asked about her well-being, something which would normally not be encouraged. Francesca diligently attended to her duties, completing as many tasks in the day as she could so that, if necessary, she could leave early to make plans or to see her beloved Michelangelo. By late afternoon, she felt she had achieved enough to go home and made to do so, but of course, her main intention was to go to see Michelangelo to ensure he was still committed to moving to the countryside and that he had not changed his mind. Chapter 35. The working week was rather dull for Isabella. Mia had just sent her daily messages, as usual, but there was nothing sensational to report. There was no follow-up from David. Perhaps he had taken offence after all. Isabella wasn't sure what she wanted to happen there. She hadn't yet had that spark that she expected to get at the start of a potential romance, like the hormonal surge women get at the start of a pregnancy. None of that. He was nice, pleasant, definitely handsome in a conventional British kind of way, and certainly well-mannered. He was good fun too. The night's dancing had proved that. Perhaps she expected too much too soon. For now, he was very definitely in the friend zone, and she didn't see him escaping from there any time soon. During the day's more monotonous tasks, she deliberately allowed her mind to wander back to the club on Friday night. But it wasn't to think of David and the night's excitement. It was to remember her last serious boyfriend, the one that had caused the problems with Mia. The fact that it had taken them both months to realise that he was hopping from one bed to the other, sharing the pair of them in effect, had probably not helped. It was hard to recall which woman was the more offended at the time. They had made up since and put it down to experience, but she had learnt a lesson there. No more gigolos like Luigi, no matter how handsome and gorgeous and good in bed he was. Midweek came, and still no sign from David. Maybe she would have to wait until the class on Friday evening to have him approach her again. Should she prepare for a night of dancing, for a meal, or nothing? She was beginning to feel a little confused about the whole situation. She hated feeling like that. She had promised herself that she would not chase any man again. It was his job to do the running and the chasing and to dance to her tune, literally. The dedication David had made in the club before he sang the Cat Stevens song had been cute, but maybe it wasn't for her after all. What if she'd got that wrong? Maybe he had more women on the go. He certainly put himself about a bit and didn't seem shy in approaching women. Maybe he was another Luigi. She sincerely hoped not. By Thursday lunchtime, Isabella had decided that David was off the radar and she'd better make alternative plans for her weekend's entertainment. She knew Mia would be away again on one of her secretive trips, something about needing to go all Italian again, whatever that meant. There were a number of other friends she hadn't seen in a while, so maybe she should look them up to see if there was any concert or theatre performance happening in the city over the weekend. She'd enjoy that. On Friday afternoon, Massimo, her boss, constructed some excuse to come in and sit on the corner of her desk to talk about her replacement and what things he should think about for the induction programme. The chat was all a little prosaic and the kind of thing that could have been covered in a 2-minute email. Instead, he sat there for over half an hour, swinging his legs across the angle of the desk, almost kicking Isabella's chair as he increased the frequency of his movements as he got more and more excited, talking about purchase ledgers and inventories. Isabella noticed that he had persisted with his boy-like habit of wearing odd socks. This time it was a stupid combination of Disney characters that just about summed him up. The red and black dog Pluto on one orange sock and a yellow affair with Mickey and Minnie Mouse dancing on a parade in a Disneyland cartoon scene. The socks were certainly eye-catching and gave her an excuse, as if she needed one, to take her eyes off his thick legs. She almost forgot that she had her English class at 7 p.m. She was in two minds whether she wanted to go or not. She hadn't missed one since she started, but she really wasn't in the mood. The uncertainty over David's unacceptable silence and attitude to her also gave her cause for concern. She gave her excuses to Massimo when he offered her out for after-work drinks and rushed home to feed the dogs and to take them out for a quick walk. It was a very humid and sticky evening, and she felt that if she was offered a night's dancing, she'd turn it down anyway. There was no chance to have a private word with David, as Gina escorted him to the entrance to the classroom and no interaction with him verbally, which would have allowed her to at least say hello, other than the general greeting he gave her everyone at the start of the session. They covered phrasal verbs, which was okay, a little boring and repetitive, but at least well delivered by David, with some attempts at British sarcasm. Her classmates didn't seem very talkative either, so all in all, the session dragged a little compared to the previous ones, which had all been very informative. At the close, everyone filed out quietly, most people at least acknowledging David as they left, except Mr. Grumpy the waiter, of course, who never seemed to quite register that David couldn't see him. Isabella made sure she was the last to leave, so that she could at least try to clear the air with David and have no hard feelings between them. It was only then that she noticed the thick bandage on his right hand. "Hello, David. It's Isabella. What have you done to your hand?" "Oh, thanks for asking. I had a bad fall down some steps near my sister's house on Sunday evening, and I've broken a couple of fingers and the scaphoid bone at the base of my thumb. My arm's a bit of a mess." David drew back his cotton sleeve to reveal deep, black bruising all the way up his arm, a small plaster cast covering the lower part of his hand, covered by his shirt sleeve during the lesson. "I had no idea," said Isabella, a little concerned that he had not let her know. "It's okay. There's nothing you could have done. I had a bit of concussion as well, so I was kept in hospital for a couple of days. I think that's my massaging career put on hold for a short while. I'm sorry I didn't get in touch, but I didn't even know if I'd make it tonight. But Gina insisted she wanted me out of the house. Apparently, I'm not the most patient, he laughed. It took a while for Isabella to work out what she wanted to say. In the end, she just said, "Would you like to go for a drink? Just for a chat, if you feel well enough?" "Sure, that would be nice. I don't feel up to dancing tonight, but I'm sure I'll be fine next week. Perhaps we could find a different club on Friday or Saturday," asked David. "Yes, let's talk about it later. Come on, I'll see you down the stairs," replied Isabella, still rather upset. Across the city, Mia pulled up the white cotton sheets to cover her naked body. Her hair looked as though she'd just done 10 rounds with the boxer Mike Tyson. She took a large gulp of water from the glass by the bed, her hands still shaking with post-orgasmic vibrations. She recovered her breath long enough to speak at last, rather than moan. As her bed partner slowly and deliberately rolled away from her, she said, insistently, "Isabella mustn't find out about this. I'm serious. Nothing. Not a word. Promise me, Luigi." Chapter 36. Francesca rolled her drawing from Michelangelo into a scroll and tied it with a piece of ribbon from her dress. The master was still busy talking to himself and etching something on a rough piece of stone on the floor. Eventually, he got frustrated with it and threw it across the floor before realizing that that was not the best thing to do, as the stone echoed around the chamber several times. There were voices in the chapel above them, and Francesca put her fingers to her mouth in a whispering motion to remind him to be quiet. "Probably just rats, but we should take a look," they heard, as footsteps could now be felt on the spiral staircase next to them. The harsh voices of the Medici guards were unmistakable, cutting and uneducated. The gruff sounds followed them down the stairs. "Who are you, Signora?" one of them shouted as he caught sight of her in the half-light. "I am Francesca Fabrizia," she cried as she shielded the crouching Michelangelo behind her skirts and cape. "I'm familiar to you, I think. I work as an archivist at the Medici court. I look after the documents of the family, and I'm here to check on some parchments and papers which were left here when Signor Buonarroti worked on the chapel some months ago." Continuing the lie, she added, "Signor Facchetti asked me to hunt down any evidence of Signor Michelangelo Buonarroti's works over the past few years, and to assemble them into a collection. That is what I am doing here. She hoped that the double bluff would be convincing, or at least confusing enough for the soldiers to accept it. So Signor Buonarroti is familiar with this place, is he? Asked the fatter of the two soldiers. Well, I suppose so, from a few months ago when he was working down here. Look over there, you can find evidence of his work, said Isabella, distracting them to look across the dark room to the barely discernible drawings of her and others that adorned the damp walls. This would make a good hiding place, if he was familiar with the surroundings. No one would think to look for him here in these rooms, would they? Said the taller soldier. Indeed so, agreed Isabella, indeed so. Have you finished your labours? Asked the first soldier. Not quite. I'm just gathering a few more pieces, and then I shall be up in the chapel, said Isabella. We didn't see you enter, observed one of the soldiers from across the room. No, are you sure? I have been here for some time, it's true. Perhaps you were on a break or something, suggested Isabella. Break? Break? Asked the other soldier. What's one of those? Signor Facchetti does not believe in breaks, as you will know if you are familiar with his ways. But he's not in the city today, so... You might be right. We could have been on a break. They laughed as though the idea had some other meaning, and more likely meant that they had indeed deserted their station during the evening, probably to frequent one of the nearby bars or brothels or both. Please let us know when you're ready to leave, Signora, and we will see to it that you get home safely. It is getting dark now, the taller soldier remarked. I will, I surely will. That's very kind of you, replied Francesca. Michelangelo was nowhere to be seen as Francesca turned around to look for him. He had slid on his belly like a snake under one of the filthy pews which lined the side of the room away from the drawings. One of them had been his makeshift bed, and it was a good thing the soldiers had not come to that part of the room, as they would have discovered his food and blankets and garnered the smell of the wooden pail he used to urinate in. You're definitely not safe here now, Michelangelo. We must leave tomorrow. Michelangelo, where are you? Inquired Francesca. Signor Buonarroti was curled up in a near-fetal position, weeping almost silently in despair. That my life has been reduced to this, hiding away in a hole and fearing for my life. Let me get you out into the countryside where you can breathe again. You will feel much better. You will be alive again. You can draw and paint and sculpt and write some more beautiful poems. Please, do not be so sad, consoled Francesca. You are right. We must leave tomorrow. I will leave my frescoes here. Maybe one day someone will look upon them and admire them as pieces of art. Do you think that that is possible, Francesca? I'm sure that is so, Master. I'm sure that is so. You don't realize how much you are loved and admired now by so many. Your legacy will last forever, and people will admire your works for hundreds of years. Imagine, in 500 years from now, people will come from all over Europe, maybe further afield, to look and marvel at the Pietà, now she is housed in Rome. They will read your poetry and fall in love with your thoughts and your heart. They will delight in your drawings, your sculptures, even these images here, and wonder at your artistry and craft. You're not just a stone carver, Michelangelo. You are a genius. Believe me on this. Trust me. I know it to be so, praised Francesca.